Wet Paint, Please Touch by Catherine Nightingale. It was a quiet morning. Ashley Road was recovering from the rush of traffic towards the M32 and the flood of pushchairs and kids heading to school from the late part of town. The van had been parked at the corner of Albert Park Place for about 5 minutes. Bling, bling, thought Carl, watching the van. Many vehicles paused there from time to time. A phone call, a business exchange, but this one was different. Carl was sure.
Yes, yes, I see it,
said the man, nodding into his phone, looking intently at Carl and then back along the wall to where Janine was trying to get her quad bike to work. Bling, thought Carl, his tape recorder turning. He studied the man, who was listening intently to his phone. The side of the van said Wainwright Painters and Landscapers.
It looks like standard chrome paint, said the man, looking at Carl. Covers about 5 foot by 30 foot, so you're looking at around 2 hours for two coats, allowing for the drying time.
Whirr, went Carl's tape recorder. By the time the van had pulled away, Carl had heard enough. He didn't quite understand what it all meant, but he knew it wasn't good. Making his way along the wall of 109 and slowly up Albert Park, he edged towards the person who would know what to do, his friend Eric. Navigating between the pavement and parked cars, head down, he was already on the road when Janine saw him.
Where are you going?
She called after him.
Bling, bling,
he said, and kept moving. At the end of the short road, he turned left, sticking to the pavement and walls, leaving a little dusty echo of colour. Had the man mending his car looked up, he might have wondered how anyone was able to spray paint a camel onto the pavement under a parked car or onto the side of a crumbly wall. But he didn't. Carl moved towards where the road narrowed and became pebbled. Hidden on the left wall behind cars, Carl could see Green Mervyn and his pocket worm.
Hello, Carl, said Mervyn.
Bling, bling, said Carl.
Carl, came a shout from the corner of Norrisville Road. It was Eric and his brothers, half fighting, half racing, half dressed in fancy dress. Eric was huge in comparison to his brothers, but somehow that didn't stop them from wrestling.
What brings you here? Said Eric, picking off the smallest brother and dangling him from an arm.
Bling, bling, said Carl, rewinding his tape recorder.
And how's Janine? Did she get that quad bike working yet?
But Carl didn't want to engage in small talk. He set the tape in motion.
2 hours for two coats, allowing for the drying time, went the tape recorder.
Carl looked at Eric, hoping he would understand.
Yeah, they want us to do all this area and down Stokes Croft, continued the man's voice. White paint over every plain wall and jet spray off the worst ones.
Eric looked intently at nothing, concentrating. His brother dangled from his forgotten hand.
I don't care which of the little graffiti fellas is your favourite, Al. They are all going, so don't get sentimental. They want this clean and green pilot program to start here and then be rolled out all over Bristol, and they will pay well too. Now take these measurements down and stop that right now.
Bling, said Carl.
Click,
said his tape recorder, coming to a standstill. Eric released his dangling brother straight onto the ground. Up Norrisville Road, Carl could see the pirate lady and her lover's ship entangled again, half asleep, half awake. Normally he would have trotted up to see her and gently nuzzle her hair, but he couldn't bear to now, not when their future seemed, well, Carl didn't know what it seemed.
Right, said Eric, give me the bike.
The middle brother John, in a goldfish outfit that must have fitted with whatever fancy dress theme Carl had disturbed, handed him a small bike with long white wings.
Bling, thought Carl, following Eric and his brothers as they set off.
They turned right down Norrisville Road, left past the screaming child and his flower mother, and turned right at the end of the road into the passage of Erie Island. The beautiful beach Carl remembered was lost in a haze of random colour, with scrawls of paint obliterating the scene, the home beneath.
Flaming tags, muttered Eric.
Then they came out into the street leading left to Herbert's Bakery. Croissants and crumpets emerged from the graffiti hole in the bakery wall, following the gingerbread man who was leading the way. He looked surprised. Graffiti on the street in daylight wasn't usual. In fact, according to feety code, it wasn't allowed.
Play it, said Eric to Carl.
Rrrr, went Carl's tape recorder, and he played the man's call. There was silence.
Flame in hell,
said Gingerbread Man.
Zut alors, said a croissant, silenced with a stare by Eric.
They can't do this, said Gingerbread Man.
Well, it looks like they can, said Eric.
No, said Gingerbread Man. They really can't do this. Not without a meaningful public consultation. It isn't allowed.
Are you sure? Said Eric.
Council rules, said Gingerbread Man.
With that, he set off at a pace, past the Tarley Cafe on the corner, turning left down York Road onto Picton Street, paint crumbs flying. Eric and his brothers followed on the bike, and Carl trotted alongside, and the croissants, crumpets and Green Mervyn came behind.
How do you know they didn't do a consultation? Shouted Eric, trying to not cycle on a pastry item.
We would have heard, said the Gingerbread Man, or the Toff would have written about it.
Francois, called the Gingerbread Man.
Oui,
said one of the croissants, racing up to join him. You'll need to go over to Cabelli and tell Uncle Sam, Rastaman and the bunnies, and any fresh paint, that we're going to need them.
Oui, said Francois.
And cut through St. Werburgh's, see the lot there. The tunnel, the farm, you know, the motorway underpass, the stormtrooper, R2-D2, everyone.
Oui,
said Francois. They'll know what it means for all Fiti if a clean and green pilot programme gets momentum.
Oui,
said Francois, and with a nod of the head, disappeared under a car tyre and down a back alley, heading in the direction of the motorway.
Bling, thought Carl, as he clopped down Picton Street, looking a little longingly at the bargain box in the second-hand clothes store and the olives in Locata's deli.
At the end of the street, Gingerbread Man turned into the tiny forecourt on the left. They all followed. It was Fiti Corner. No area left unattended of paint and colour, and their arrival created quite a buzz.
"Over here, Eric," shouted Gingerbread Man.
The bike pulled in and the smaller brothers cascaded off.
"Come with me, Carl," said Eric.
Carl clopped after him. Fiti looked down from all sides. Some of them Carl knew. Charlie Mono Brown, Yellow Bird and the Scarfed Rider. Carl had been around a while and seen many emerge as the area's creative heart had been allowed to beat. But others were new paint, still wet around the edges and looked aloof and challenging.
Play the tape, Carl, said Eric.
Bling, thought Carl.
Rrr. 2 hours for two coats, allowing for the drying time, went the tape as the man's voice emerged.
The tape ended.
Do they really want to get rid of us?
Asked Charlie Mono Brown, his one eye blinking.
Property developers, money people, they think Fiti are the same as tags, said Eric.
The Fiti gasped.
But the people know we're different,
said Burglar Boulder, a Fiti sculpture firmly rooted to the corner of Picton Street.
The people love Fiti Corner. They love us.
Yeah, shouted the colourful crowd.
But they haven't asked the people, said Gingerbread Man. They haven't done a public consultation, he stated, like the voice of authority.
The Fiti were looking at him, confused.
Isn't that against council rules?
Asked Charlie Mono Brown.
Yes, we need to stop them, shouted Gingerbread Man.
Oui, shouted a croissant. Yeah, shouted the crowd, louder now and growing.
Just then Carl saw the painter's van at the end of Picton Street.
Bling, bling,
shouted Carl, and bit Eric hard on the arm.
Ow,
said Eric, and looked at Carl angrily. The van was parking and holding up the line of traffic at the lights.
Shh,
said Eric, pointing to the van, silencing the Fiti crowd. The crowd watched. Way above them, overlooking the city from the top of Westmoreland House, someone else was watching. Someone who had not stirred for a while. Slowly, on the morning air, drifting out from the windowless holes in the desolate building, came the smell of burning candy. Back on the street, the van driver Carl had seen before was joined by a shorter, balder version, taking photos and measurements. At Fiti Corner, the frozen Fiti overheard the words,
"Spray jet for the ground and stone,"
Burglar Boulder shuddered,
"and white paint for the walls and building works."
Then the men turned left, round the building and along down Stokes Croft.
"It doesn't seem right, Mo," said the smaller man as he photographed the graffiti.
"What are you talking about, Al?"
said the other man, starting to put little white chalk crosses on the Fiti arches along the road. Cross, the primate band. Cross, the hungry orange monster. Cross, the beautiful water nymphs from the cultural centre who never seemed cold.
"These murals, these pictures,"
said Al, looking up the road to where Eric, Carl and Gingerbread Man were frozen against the wall.
"Well, there are just so many of them, and they seem so well thought through."
He looked over to the shadowy figure banging on the front of Mrs. Lovett's meat pie shops.
"Nah, mate, it isn't like that,"
said Mo, chalk crossing the stenciled soldier and his paint gun by the bank pub and walking on.
"These are just splurges of paint, like they were peeing, like a dog marking its territory."
The soldier blinked,
then recharged his automatic assault paint gun with a click. Sure, some of these random tag thingies ruin it, but these big paintings, well, said Al, looking up at the company press lady on the recess of Hamilton House canteen and the teddy bear fighting with the riot police. They had arrived at Turbo Island. It's kids with nothing better to do, continued Mo, crossing over to the traffic island and starting to chalk the Easter Island heads. They blinked as he passed. A big load of pee that we will get paid nice wads to clean up. That's all you need to think about. But how does someone pee up there? Thought Al, looking up at the police and teddy bear. Invisible from the road, someone else continued to listen. On the top of Westmoreland House, Isla Sockets observed the activities in Stokes Croft. A crocodile the size of a bedroom licked its lips. The large white skull looked on, etched against a greying sky. Are you thinking what I'm thinking, my darling? Said the skull, looking at Turbo Island and stroking the crocodile carefully. The crocodile blinked. Eric, Carl and Gingerbread Man had got to Turbo Island and were hovering on the corner by Hamilton House canteen. The Feety crowd were imperceptible to the drivers and cars moving through, but to the other Feety, their presence created a stir. The teddy bear stopped mid-throw and stared down at Eric and Gingerbread Man. The police followed his gaze. This is against Feety code, said the lead policeman, waving his baton. Hello, 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 said little Easter Island Eddie, who still had his wings and flew along the wall and onto the pavement to Gingerbread Man from the centre of Turbo Island. What's going on here? There's no time to explain, said Gingerbread Man. It's an emergency. Carl overheard these guys, property developers that have an eye on the area, and they're pushing through a clean and green pilot programme without consultation. All eyes turned on Carl. Bling, bling, said Carl. Click, went the tape recorder. 2 hours for two coats, allowing for the drying time. There's no time for that, said Gingerbread Man. Just then, Mo crossed back over the road. Al was standing outside the Pro Sound and Lighting shop, taking yet another photo. Mo, it's not right, said Al. This paintwork here has taken precision and time. There are at least 16 different pigments here. So when was the last time you peed in 16 different colours? Listen to me, Al, said Mo. I don't give a how many colours there are. Neither does the property developer who is bankrolling this pilot project. So shut up or I will do it for you. The men stared at each other, watched by Feety on either side. Mo clenched his fist round the chalk. I want you to get the rest of these down while I go to the van for the jet spray. Mo pointed down Stokes Croft. The alien brain on the right, the little bird box skull man on the left, the old lady with her flower tickler round the corner, and upstairs neighbours. Al blinked. On the right further down you've got the Christmas Carol boys. Get their measurements, then head up to the right and get the panda collector lady, all her exploring team, the stilts, and the red wave before you come back down Jamaica Street. Are you sure there's nothing else? Said Al sarcastically. Mo raised an eyebrow. Aggressively. While you are at it, you can head down to Lakota and get the measurements of the kids and their burning ring of fire. Is that enough, or do you want more to be getting on with? Al turned and started walking down the street. And when I get back, we begin getting rid of all of this, starting with this flaming camel. The Feety froze. I have seen about 100 of these things this morning, said Mo, turning back up the road towards the van, and I will enjoy wiping its grin away permanently. The Feety were in a panic. We've got to hide Carl, said Eric. We've got to stop them, said the Gingerbread Man. This can't be right, said the oldest Easter Island statue. It isn't allowed, said the alien brain, who had joined them, now with a fresh chalk cross. They haven't done a public consultation. We know, said Eric and Gingerbread Man. We could arrest them, said one of the policemen, but shut up quickly with a look from the teddy bear. Feety can't arrest them. They can't hear us, said Eric, and we can't touch them. We know that, said Gingerbread Man with a pause. But do they? Eric looked at Carl. Bling, bling, thought Carl. Just then there was a whistle from the corner. The vision of Uncle Sam and a stormtrooper carrying an exhausted croissant and followed by a slightly singed R2-D2, several rabbits and an assortment of Feety grew larger by the second. We need to organise, said Gingerbread Man. Follow me. Al was back at Turbo Island, angry and upset. How could anyone call the panda lady in her nymph-like hair simply peeing? Would that house really look better without the Japanese red wave set to crash onto the street? Behind the bell, where the bins were, he had found another vision. A woman so beautiful, the whole world wanted to live in her hair. He hadn't photographed her, and he wasn't going to make her any part of this pilot project. In fact, if Al had his way, this pilot project would lose its pilot. Looking up, he saw Mo standing outside Hamilton House canteen with a large blue backpack on and carrying another.
"Here, put this on," said Mo. "Now where is that bloody camel?"
He looked around and walked down towards Pro Sound and Lighting, where he'd last seen Carl.
"Ah, there it is," he said,
and stepped towards where Carl was frozen against the existing graffiti. The others hid.
"Bling, bling," thought Carl.
"Now," said Eric.
Click,
went the tape recorder, and Mo's voice emerged. 2 hours for two coats, allowing for the drying time," came the sound.
"What's that, Mo?" said Al.
"I didn't say anything," said Mo, who had also heard it.
"Are you sure?" said Al.
"Bristol wants graffiti,"
came Mo's words after a little editing. Al and Mo looked at each other confused.
"Does Bristol want graffiti, Mo?" said Al.
"No, it does not. That's not me," shouted Mo, getting ready to turn on his jet spray.
He caught Al looking over his shoulder. Turning slowly, he looked up to see a towering gingerbread man, Eric and Uncle Sam, accompanied by the alien brain, yellow bird and the panda lady. Mo gulped. Al shrieked.
"Stop that right now," whirred Mo's voice from Carl's tape recorder. "Bristol wants graffiti."
"Turn on your jetpack, Al," whispered Mo, sweating tensely.
Said Al, dribbling slightly.
Turning slowly to see the policeman and teddy bear emerging from the side of the canteen wall.
"Stop that right now," whirred Carl.
Al nudged Mo. The world had suddenly become one mass of colour and characters. Pastries from Herbert's, Charlie Mono Brown and the Feety Corner Lot, the Primate Band and several pandas. Even the red wave reared up over the back of Turbo Island. Then several things began to happen at once. Mo saw Carl's tape recorder, turned on his jetpack, and aimed the hard, cutting spray at it, sending dirt and pigment flying from the pavement.
"Stop this," said Carl's tape recorder.
Al had seen something behind the red wave, the lady from the bell.
"Bristol wants graffiti,"
went Mo's voice. The lady from the bell blinked, slowly, calmly, beautifully.
"Yes," thought Al, "it does."
"We can't do it, Mo,"
he said, lunging for the jet spray gun in Mo's hands. The feety gasped as the end of the spray flailed wildly and hit one of the policemen in the leg, laming him before cutting a hole in Uncle Sam's hat.
"Stop that," went Carl's tape recorder.
Mo had his hands on the gun, but so had Al, and the two were caught in a wet frenzy. The feety moved in slowly from every side, cautious of the jet spray, but mesmerising the two men who seemed surrounded.
"Bristol once," went the tape recorder. "No, it doesn't," shouted Mo, finally wrestling the jet spray away from Al. "They hate you, and they're going to pay us to get rid of you."
Mo aimed the jet spray right for the tape recorder. Carl began to feel a numbness sweeping over him.
"Stop that right now," went the tape recording.
Mo increased the jet spray strength. The feety gasped.
"Bristol what?"
went Mo's voice, slowing and deepening, and then a different sound could be heard. From far above, the sound of jaws gnashing. Coming towards them from the desolate building at the top of the street, flying along the side of the houses, offices, shops and canteen, was the face of a skull, and on the end of a long lead was a crocodile the size of Mo's van.
"Ah!" cried Al,
pointing and trying to grab Mo, but collapsing back onto the pavement. Slowly, reluctant to take his eyes off the jet spray or Carl, Mo looked up. All he saw was a flash of green, looming white teeth, and then waves of black coming over him and over him and over him, and then nothing. Nothing but the long lingering smell like the candy floss stall at a fairground. Hot, heavy, and very, very sweet. Mo had gone. The jet spray lay on the pavement trickling. There was no one on the trigger. Al had run towards town screaming, and the crocodile was nowhere to be seen. Eric was leaning over Carl, slapping the camel's muzzle. He could see where a whole chunk had been taken out of his chest and tape recorder. "Carl, move aside," said Gingerbread Man, pulling at Eric. R2-D2 came forward. A small sponge emerged from a slot and sampled some of Carl's dripping paint. After several beeps, he brought out a nozzle attached to a tube and began to spray paint. "Carl, can you hear me?" said Eric. Carl opened one eye slowly. "Bling," he said, looking around for signs of Mo and Al. "2 hours for two coats, allowing for the drying time?" asked Carl's tape recorder. "They've gone," said Eric. "Bristol wants graffiti?" came the question from Carl. Gingerbread Man looked at Eric, Uncle Sam, the police, the teddy, the panda lady, and the hundreds more feety still scattered around Turbo Island. "Well, we're pretty sure most of them do," said Gingerbread Man. "Uncle Sam and I have been talking. We think we can push a consultation that will work in our favour." "Bristol wants graffiti," word Carl. No longer a question, he promptly fell asleep in Eric's arms.